Why? Rule of thumb. This place is trashed from top to bottom and side to side. Totally. And normally, when you find what you're looking for, you stop looking. But these guys never stopped looking. So if they found what they came for, by chance, they found it in the very last place they chose to look. And how likely is that? Not very. So I think they never stopped looking because they never found what they wanted.
So where is it?
I don't know. What would it be?
Paperwork?
A floppy disk? A CD-ROM? Something like that?
Small, Reacher said.
He didn't take it home. I think he was separating home and work. Think like them. Be them. Reacher turned around and put his back to Franz's door, as if he had just stepped out to the sidewalk. He cupped his hand and looked down at his empty palm. He had done plenty of paperwork in his life, but he had never used a computer disk or burned a CD-ROM. But he knew what one was. It was a 5-inch round piece of polycarbonate, often in a thin plastic case. A floppy disk was smaller, square, about 3 inches, maybe. Letter-sized paperwork would trifold down to 8.5 inches by about 4.
Small, but vital.
Where would Calvin Franz hide something small but vital? Negley said,
maybe it was in his car. He drove back and forth, apparently. So if it was a CD, he could have kept it in his auto changer. Like hiding it in plain sight, you know, maybe the 4th slot after the John Coltrane stuff.
Miles Davis, Reacher said. He preferred Miles Davis. He only listened to John Coltrane on Miles Davis albums.
He could have made it look like stuff he had downloaded. You know, he could have written Miles Davis on it with a marker pen.
They'd have found it, Reacher said. Guys this thorough? They'd have checked everything. And I think Franz would have wanted more security than that. Plain sight means it's right there in front of you all the time. You can't relax. And I think Franz wanted to relax. I think he wanted to get home to Angela and Charlie and not have things on his mind.
So where? A safe deposit box?
I don't see a bank here. And I don't think he would have wanted to take much of a detour. Not with this traffic. Not if there was some kind of urgency. And a bank's lobby hours don't necessarily suit a working stiff.
There are 2 keys on the ring, Nagley said. Although it's possible the smaller one was for the desk.
Reacher turned again and looked through the gloom at the drifts of trash and wreckage. The desk lock was in there somewhere, presumably. A small steel rectangle torn out of the wood and dumped. He turned back and stepped to the curb, looked left, looked right, cupped his hand again and looked down at his empty palm. First,
what would I hide?
It's a computer file, he said. Got to be. Because they knew to look for it. Any kind of handwritten paperwork, Franz wouldn't have told them anything about it. But probably they took his computers first and found some kind of traces that told them he'd been copying files. That happens, right? Computers leave traces of everything. But Franz wouldn't tell them where the copies were. Maybe that's why they broke his legs. But he kept quiet, which is why they had to come out here on this wild-ass search.
So where is it?
Reacher looked down at his hand again.
Where would I hide something small and vital?
Not under any old rock. I would want somewhere structured. Maybe somewhere kind of custodial. I would want someone to be responsible.
A safe deposit box, Nagley said again. In a bank. The small key has no markings. Banks do that.
I don't like banks, Reacher said. I don't like the hours and I don't like the detour. Once, maybe, but not often. Which is the issue, because there's some kind of regularity involved here, isn't there? Isn't that what people do with computers? They back stuff up every night? So this wouldn't be a one-time thing. It would be a matter of routine, which changes things somewhat. A one-time thing, you might go to extraordinary lengths. Every night, you need something safe but easy and permanently available.
I email stuff to myself, Nagley said. Reacher paused a beat, smiled. There you go. You think that's what Franz did?
Not a chance. Email would have come straight back to his computer, which the bad guys had. They'd have spent their time trying to break down his password instead of busting up his building.
So what did he do?
Reacher turned and glanced along the row of stores.
The dry cleaner, the nail salon, the pharmacy, the post office.
Not email. Regular mail. That's what he did. He backed up his stuff onto some kind of a disk, and every night he put it in an envelope and dropped it in the mail, addressed to himself, to his post office box, because that's where he got his mail, in the post office. There's no slot in his door. Once the envelope was out of his hand, it was safe. It was in the system, with a whole bunch of custodians looking after it all day and all night.
Slow, Nagley said.
Reacher nodded. He must have had three or four disks in rotation. Any particular day, two or three of them would be somewhere in the mail, but he went home every night knowing his latest stuff was safe. It's not easy to rob a mailbox or make a clerk give you something that doesn't belong to you. USPS bureaucracy is about as safe as a Swiss bank.
The small key, Nagley said. Not his desk. Not a safe deposit box.
Reacher nodded again. His post office box.
Chapter 12. But United States Postal Service bureaucracy cut two ways. It was late in the afternoon. The dry cleaners was still open. The nail salon was open. The pharmacy was open. But the post office was closed. Lobby hours had ended at 4 o'clock.
Tomorrow, Nagley said. We're going to be in the car all day. We have to get to Swan's place, too, unless we separate.
It's going to take two of us here, Reacher said. But maybe one of the others will show up and do some work.
I wish they would, and not because I'm lazy.
For form's sake, like a little ritual, she pulled out her cell phone and checked the tiny screen. No messages.
There were no messages at the hotel desk, either. No messages on the hotel voicemail, no emails on either one of Nagley's laptop computers, nothing.
They can't just be ignoring us, she said.
No, they wouldn't do that.
I'm getting a real bad feeling.
I've had a real bad feeling ever since I went to that ATM in Portland. I spent all my money taking someone to dinner, twice. Now I wish we had stayed in and ordered pizza. She might have paid. I wouldn't know about any of this yet.
She?
Someone I met.
Cute.
There's a button.
Cuter than Carla Dixon?
Comparable.
Cuter than me?
Is that even possible?
Did you sleep with her?
Who?
The woman in Portland.
Why do you want to know that?
Nagley didn't answer. She just shuffled the five sheets of contact information like a card player and dealt Reacher two and kept three for herself. Reacher got Tony Swan and Carla Dixon. He used the landline on the credenza and tried Swan first. 30, 40 rings, no answer. He dabbed the cradle and tried Dixon's number, a 212 area code for New York City. No answer. 6 rings, and straight to a machine. He listened to Dixon's familiar voice and waited for the beep and left her the same message he had left earlier.
This is Jack Reacher with a 1030 from Francis Nagley at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel in Los Angeles, California. Get off your ass and call her back.
Then he paused the beat and added,
Please, Carla, we really need to hear from you.
Then he hung up. Nagley was closing her cell phone and shaking her head.
Not good.
They could all be on vacation.
At the same time?
They could all be in jail. We were a pretty rough bunch.
First thing I checked, they're not in jail.
Reacher said nothing.
Nagley said,
You really liked Carla, didn't you? You sounded positively tender there on the phone.
I liked all of you,
but her especially.
Did you ever sleep with her?
No.
Why not?
I recruited her. I was her CEO, wouldn't have been right.
Was that the only reason?
Probably.
Okay.
Reacher asked, what do you know about their businesses? Is there any good reason why they should all be out of contact for days at a time?
I guess O'Donnell could have to travel overseas,
Nagley said.
His practice is pretty general. Marital stuff could take him to hotels down in the islands, I guess.
Or any place if he's chasing unpaid alimony.
Child abductions or custody issues could take him anywhere. People looking to adopt sometimes send detectives to Eastern Europe or China or wherever to make sure things are kosher. There are lots of possible reasons.
But
I'd have to talk myself into really believing one of them.
What about Carla?
She could be down in the Caymans looking for someone's money, I guess. But I imagine she'd do that online from her office. It's not like the money is actually there.
So where is it?
It's notional. It's electricity in a computer.
What about Sanchez and Orozco?
They're in a closed world. I don't see why they would ever have to leave Vegas, not professionally.
What do we know about Swan's company?
It exists. It does business. It files. It has an address. Apart from that, not much.
Presumably it has security issues, or Swan wouldn't have gotten hired.
All defense contractors have security issues. Or they think they ought to have, because they want to think what they do is important.
Reacher said nothing to that, just sat and stared out the window. It was getting dark. A long day, nearly over.
Franz didn't go to his office the morning he disappeared.
You think?
We know. Angela had his set of keys. He left them home. He was going somewhere else that day.
Nagley said nothing.
And the landlord at the strip mall saw the bad guys. Franz's lock wasn't broken. They didn't take Franz's key from him because he didn't have it in his pocket. Therefore, they scammed one or bought one from the owner. Therefore, the owner saw them. Therefore, we need to find him tomorrow, along with everything else.
Franz should have called me,
Nagley said.
I would have dropped everything.
I wish he had called you. If you'd been there, none of this bad stuff would have happened.
Reacher and Nagley ate dinner in the downstairs restaurant, front corner of the lobby, where a bottle of still water from Norway cost $8. Then they said good night and split up and headed for their separate rooms. Reacher's was a chintzy cube, two floors below Nagley's suite. He stripped and showered and folded his clothes and put them under the mattress to press. He got into bed and folded his hands behind his head and stared up at the ceiling. Thought about Calvin Franz for a minute, in random, flashing images, the same way a political candidate's biography is squeezed into a 30-second television commercial. His memory made some of the pictures sepia and some of them washed out, but in all of them, Franz was moving, talking, laughing, full of drive and energy. Then Carla Dixon joined the parade, petite, dark, sardonic, laughing with Franz. Dave O'Donnell was there, tall, fair, handsome, like a stockbroker with a switchblade. And Jorge Sanchez, durable, eyes narrowed, with a hint of a smile that showed a gold tooth, and was as close as he ever came to showing contentment, and Tony Swan as wide as he was high, and Manuel Orozco opening and closing a Zippo lighter because he liked the sound so much. Even Stan Lowry was there, shaking his head, drumming his fingers on a table to a rhythm only he could hear. Then Reacher blinked all the pictures away and closed his eyes and fell asleep. 10:30 in the evening, a long day. Over.
10:30 in the evening in Los Angeles was 1:30 the next morning in New York, and the last British Airways flight from London, delayed, had just landed at JFK. The delay meant that the last immigration watch in British Airways' own terminal had already gone off duty, so the plane taxied to Terminal 4 and fed its passengers through the giant arrivals hall there. Third in the visitors' line was a first-class passenger who had napped in seat 2K for most of the trip. He was medium height, medium weight, expensively dressed, and he radiated the kind of expansive, self-confident courtesy typical of people who know how lucky they are to have been rich all their lives. He was perhaps 40 years old. He had thick black hair, shiny, beautifully cut, and the kind of mid-brown skin and regular features that could have made him Indian or Pakistani or Iranian or Syrian or Lebanese or Algerian or even Israeli or Italian. His passport was British, and it passed the immigration agent's scrutiny with no trouble at all, as did its owner's manicured forefingers on the electronic fingerprint pad. 17 minutes after unclipping his seatbelt, the guy was out in the shiny New York night, walking briskly to the head of the cab line.